As consumers, we are bombarded by it at every turn, like the Incredible Hulk being bombarded by gamma rays. But what makes some media endure, while others are banished to the forgotten black hole of obscurity, never to be heard from again? Who or what decides this? Hetero life mates Steve and Yehel want to know, and they want to know now. This is Obscurity Now.
And what's up, Obscurians? It's time for another episode of Obscurity Now, the show where we take a look at weird and almost forgotten pieces of media, then we decide if they should be remembered for all of human history or tossed in the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again. My name is Steve, and with me, he's a man who's remembering the time that he brought his first goth girl home to his parents, only to accidentally be shot by them.
It's Yehel. How you doing?
Oh, just making accurate predictions about things that you're thinking about. How are you?
I'm great. I just watched a few hours ago, rewatched for the third time, My Zombie Lover.
Oh, wow.
So, I watched it the first time I watched it, obviously, mm-hmm. that I discovered it. And then the second time I watched it, showing it to someone. And then I needed to watch it again for the notes.
Nice. So how, all right, first off, ladies and gentlemen, we are covering today, it's a horror anthology from 1988, Monsters, a specific episode that Yehel here picked out because it's very close to his heart. it's season one, episode five, My Zombie Lover, not to be confused with My Demon Lover, the cheesy 80s horror rom-com that we covered a few months back, which should definitely check out if you're curious. But for now, I want to know, how did you stumble across this specific episode?
So, I mean, initially, I had never even heard of the show as of a few weeks ago. Like, I think I reached out to you. It must have been like the day after I watched it, maybe even the day of, I don't know. But basically, I got a reel on Instagram, and it was like an episode from the show, not the one we're watching today, but a different one with Matt LeBlanc, a.k.a. Joey from Friends. And it looked just ridiculous, like kind of B-horror, you know, so bad it's good kind of a thing. So I actually specifically looked up that episode and watched that episode, which is like about barbers being vampires or something.
Oh, nice.
it's actually a pretty fun one, and I would have gone with that one, but because Wesley Crusher, Will Wheaton, is actually in that episode too, starring with Matt LeBlanc. They're like the two main characters. But then I just started, I found like a channel that had like all of the episodes, and I just started watching them from the beginning. So I've watched a lot of these Monsters episodes. Nice. And I skipped to this one though when I read the description, and loved it. It's my favorite one so far. So spoiler alert, I really like this episode. I discovered it.
So, yes, dear listener, if you don't want this episode spoiled for you, you should go watch it for free on YouTube. There'll be a link down in the description. I will say, though, that I do remember this show from way back. I don't know. It came out late 80s, early 90s, and I'm pretty sure I watched it when it was on a TV. I remember it was like a double feature. It was Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side, which I don't know if you ran across this during your research, but they are both produced by the same guy or the same creators here, and that is Richard.
I'm not surprised because they have the same kind of vibe and look, and honestly, the sets in this one aren't too bad, but the sets in a lot of episodes are like paper thin. Like, they look very cheap, which is, you know, also something Tales from the Dark Side often, I don't want to say suffers from, but features.
Yeah, they. It's written that each episode was about $200,000 per episode, which is much lower than what was normal for typical network television shows back then. And, it's created by Richard P. Rubenstein and Mitchell Galen. And, yeah, they had previously created Tales from the Dark Side, and... This is weird. The reason why they even made Monsters is for this reason. Apparently, Tales from the Dark Side got great reviews and praise tended to focus on the stories and the acting, with no mention of the makeup effects or the special effects. So that really pissed off.
That just ate at
me. Yeah. Richard and Mitchell, they had it. So they're like, we're going to give a big middle finger to everyone by making another show called Monsters, which is based all around the makeup effects, because every episode basically revolves around a different monster. I'm not familiar with this makeup effects artist, Dick Smith. Apparently, he was a really big deal back in the day. And he was hired to be the makeup effects consultant on Monsters. And that is basically sort of how Monsters came to be. I would like to talk a bit more.
Dick Smith sounds like a great, like, 70s porn name, though. Like, for a movie like The Dick Smith. Sort of words.
The Dick Smith. Yes, he's just so good. That's what they call him.
That's right.
Eventually, London Vice would have turned into London the Dick Smith Vice, right? Eventually.
Oh, man, that is a great, great nickname.
Oh, yeah? You're going to get back in the ring?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good reason to just...
So you can call yourself the Dick Smith. Well,
yeah,
we can. I don't know, we'll work it into the podcast somehow. But are you ready to dive a little bit deeper into Monsters, Mr. Dick Smith?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh yeah.
Welcome to your feature presentation.
All right, so I mentioned the creators here, Richard P. Rubenstein and Mitchell Galen. And we'll start with Richard here. He's also known as the Dick Smith, since his name is Richard. But earlier off air, as you say, we were discussing Dune. And this gentleman here recently produced Dune 1 and 2. So he's still quite active, has had a pretty amazing career. He actually started with George Romero. There, he basically produced Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, and then with their company called Laurel Entertainment. And then basically George was like, "Ooh, I don't want to have anything to do with this business stuff, man. I'm an artist. I'm splitting." Mm. So that just left Richard here with everything. So from there, he just... basically kept producing like Stephen King movies and other sort of horror related stuff. Of course, as we mentioned, Tales from the Dark Side. And he did also the remake of Dawn of the Dead, the Zack Snyder one. What do you think of what do you think of both Dawn of the Dead? I'm just curious.
I don't know if is the Zack Snyder one, the one where they're like at the mall?
Yeah, that's the thing with Dawn of the Dead. They both take place in a mall.
Oh, but like somebody gives birth to like a zombie baby.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I remember that. I think I remember enjoying that movie. I mean, it's not like great cinema, but it was like dumb action movie fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree completely.
Yeah, it was fine. And I generally don't like Zack Snyder films. Mm-hmm. I generally don't. I think he's pretty overrated for the most part, but even a broken clock is wrong once every 30 movies or whatever.
What? I think you're mixing your metaphors there, Mr. Dick Smith, but I get what you're saying. I mean, I think he had a pretty strong start, and I think he's better when he has like somebody else as like a DP. Like, did you watch that Netflix? I can't even remember what it's
Rebel Moon.
No, I want to watch that, but I haven't yet. The zombie.
No, you don't.
The zombie one he did before that.
No, I keep forgetting about it. The one with Batista in
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Because it does look fun.
It's good. It's just the cinematography, because he was his own DP for that. Like, do you remember back in like
how much slow motion, unnecessary slow motion is it in?
I don't know if there's that much slow motion, but what really bugged me, there's so much depth of field. Like, I don't know if you ever watched like YouTube videos of people testing out like a new DSLR. Mm-hmm. Like, they're always like, "Ooh, look at the depth of field and my friend smoking here and the low light capabilities." That's what the cinematography on that zombie movie felt like to me. But I actually like Zack Snyder.
You know,
I'm kind of a Zack
I think some of I suspect that some of that might be there's a And they actually replaced one of the main actors the whole movie because they got, I can't remember what he did. I think something came out that he had maybe like sexually assaulted someone. It was something along those lines. So they replaced him with Tig Notaro.
Okay.
So she was like never really in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I had seen like a feature.
The helicopter pilot or whatever she was.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I've seen a featurette about how they replaced her and they did change like some lighting and some stuff sometimes where they couldn't quite, I don't know, get her in well to kind of hide it. So maybe that's why, but.
I don't know. When you see it and you see that it's pretty much in every frame, I don't know. But
Rebel Moon, I only got through like 30 minutes of that and. I would say about 20 minutes of it was just slow motion. It's rough.
Well, I consider myself a Zack Snyder apologist. Like I think he usually has a strong visual style, even if like whatever it is he's whatever script he's working from is kind of mediocre. I kind of enjoy I don't know, like I said, his earlier like visual stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen Rebel Moon yet, so we'll have to come back and sort of have a brief aside about it, if you will. But moving on here with Monsters, the co-creator, Mitchell Galen, he basically worked on a lot of the same stuff as Richard Rubenstein here, Tales from the Dark Side. He's currently working on the new Creepshow, and he produced Sting, The Moment of Truth, and that is Steve Borden's Sting, not the bass player. And he also worked on Dune miniseries. So, yeah, both these guys are still pretty active. This is, I guess, where they started, more or less.
That's so strange because, like, that Moment of Truth movie is like a Christian movie. So it's.
Thought it was like just a sort of wrestling biopic because he's in his makeup and everything.
Oh, he never leaves the house without his makeup.
Unless he's.
But maybe I'm mixing it up with something. No, you're right. It's like a wrestling DVD or whatever.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought that was random that he produced that. So moving on to Monsters Season 1, Episode 5. It premiered November 19th, 1988. And here's a synopsis. One night each year, the dead come back to life. A young zombie falls for his living female classmate, but his hunger for human flesh and her prejudiced zombie-hunting dad stand in the way of their happiness in this horror comedy. I mean, if that's not like Yehel's like teen high school years, I don't know what is. So this was both written and directed by one David Mish. He produced 57 episodes of Duckman, a show that we previously covered. Two episodes of Monsters. I didn't check out the other one that he directed. But yeah, as far as directing, that's all he's done is directed the two episodes of Monsters. He also wrote for Police Squad, Saturday Night Live, and also co-produced another show that we previously covered, Jack of All Trades, starring Bruce Campbell. That's going to do it for me. Who are some of the people who acted in front of the camera?
Well, we only see five, so I'm going to just cover them all. First, we have Tempest Bledsoe, who's our main character. Well, she and Paul are the... Right? Mm-hmm. Probably best known from The Cosby Show, where she was Vanessa Huxtable. Mm-hmm. She's been in quite a few other things, though. Then we've got... And she plays Dottie. I don't know if I said that, but that's the character's name. Steve Harper, he plays Paul Nichols, which is the other main character, the zombie in the movie. He's only acted in like, it was like 19 things or something like that. Really nothing of note, but he did do some producing and writing on TV shows and is still writing. He's a writer on Tracker, which is a Paramount Plus show that I get commercials for every time. Almost, I go to watch Star Trek, and it looks god-awful.
What is it about?
I don't know what it's about, but they want you they really want you to think that the main character is charming, and that this other woman and him have chemistry. And neither is true.
Is it like a sort of like a detective thing, cop thing?
I don't know, because he's always like out in the woods. So I don't know if maybe right, he's just like...
I'll check it out myself.
Look. Coulter Shaw travels the country in his old school RV, helping police and private citizens solve crimes. Helping police and private citizens solve crime, like he's Angela Lansbury,
yep.
And locate missing persons until his latest case changes everything.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It's pretty awful. Like I almost want to send you the commercial for the trailer for it, because I can't. Even though I'm never going to watch it, it doesn't really affect my life. I also can't wait for it to be canceled.
I hear all of Paramount Plus is kind of in the toilet if it makes you feel any better.
Yeah, pretty. I think the only thing people are watching on there is RuPaul's Drag Race, Young Sheldon, and Star Trek.
Isn't South Park on there too, though?
Well, that's also like on Max or something, I think, now.
Okay.
I got an ad today for South Park on Max. South Park and Rick and Morty, which I thought was weird.
Young but sometimes Sheldon? That's disgusting.
I know. All the Big Bang Theory shows, like, and spinoffs were terrible. And so are the people that like it.
Yes, absolutely.
I get into an argument with Randall about Big Bang Theory almost once a week. Up next we've got Ed Wheeler. He plays the dad. He's been in quite a few things, but he has not acted since 2010. I'm not sure if he's still alive.
Okay.
But if he is, he's not acting.
His career is dead.
But, you know, he'd be older, so I'm sure, you know, he'd just be retired at some point. But he was also on an episode of The Cosby Show, so I thought that was interesting. It was a few years after Monsters, but... then we've got Marcella Lowry, who plays the mom. Mm-hmm. And she's been in quite a few things, but it's weird. Like, I don't remember watching pretty much any of these things, but she looked really familiar to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's done like a lot of guest spots on TV shows. She was in New Jack City, but I don't think I ever watched
that. Yeah, I've never seen it either.
I heard it's good. Yeah. I just never watched it. But anyway, but she looked really familiar. Yeah. Anyway, she was great. Everybody in this like puts on a great performance.
Sure.
Then we've got Eugene Bird, who plays Brad. He's like the young son. He's like 10 or 11, I guess he's supposed to be. And he's hilarious. Oh, yeah. Like, I usually despise child actors. This kid was incredible with his delivery.
And I'm sure you were thrilled with what's implied that happens to him at the end of the episode.
Oh, I think it's more than implied, but yeah, we'll get to the ending. But yeah, this guy's had the most success out of everybody. He's got 133 credits to his name, a lot of animated stuff. He's currently on Spidey and His Friends. But yeah, he's done lots of guest starring roles. He's been like lots of bit parts of movies. He was on a couple Lego Star Wars shows. So yeah, he's done very well for himself. And I actually recognize him as an adult. I've definitely seen him in stuff.
Cool.
And that is our cast. But I did want to mention that throughout Monsters, there's a ton of, like, you know, very well-known actors that appear in the series throughout it. So I just want to name a few of them. So Meatloaf is in an episode. David Brisbane from Hey Dude, he's in an episode.
Nice.
Jeff Conway is in an episode. David Spade, Linda Blair, Kevin Nealon. Actually, David Spade and Kevin Nealon, if I remember right, they're in the same episode. There was Debbie Harry's in it.
Nice.
And yeah, there's a bunch more. Like, we'd be here all day, like, going through all these names. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. And then obviously, like I mentioned earlier, Matt LeBlanc, Will Wheaton. There was somebody else from the Cosby Show I thought I saw in the list. But yeah, it's a huge kind of who's who of actors.
Nice. Yeah.
Which is weird because the show has no budget, like you mentioned, only 200K an episode. So I don't know if maybe the creators just, you know, people like the concept, or maybe, you know, he was as well liked. I don't know.
Well, one thing that they mention about Rubenstein is that he likes taking chances on, like, I guess, unknowns. Like, I guess I don't think Zack Snyder had ever directed a feature before he did that Dawn of the Dead remake that I know of. So maybe these people just, you know, they wanted to take kind of a stab at acting. And or maybe they were all just big horror fans and wanted to work with Rubenstein because he worked with Romero on Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, all that other stuff. But yeah, you mentioned Linda Blair. One of the few pieces of trivia I could dig up on this show was that Linda Blair and Peggy Cass are the only Oscar nominees to appear in the show's 3-season run. I forgot to mention that at the beginning, that this show ran for 3 seasons, a total of 72 episodes. Ran from 1988 to 1990. So someone was watching back then. Take us through My Zombie Lover.
All right, so it starts off like every episode of Monsters with this little vignette / skit of this like weird family getting ready to watch TV. It's always the same skit, but basically it's like the mom and daughter are like these weird cyclops.
Yeah.
Or psychs, as you call them.
I can't believe you remember that. Oh my God.
And the dad, though, is not a cyclops. The dad, like, his face looks like a weird potato-y kind of thing, but then he's got a claw hand.
Yeah, yeah. Some, like, I remember first seeing this opening or maybe even a commercial as a kid, and it scared and fascinated me at the same time. I was just like, oh my.
Yeah, the makeup's pretty good.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, it's a normal family, but they're not. Like, I'm just like, I have to know more.
Yeah, yeah. And then they all sit down because Monsters is starting, and then they all sit there and they go to watch it. So, and I did remember before I started watching the series a couple weeks ago, like seeing that opening before. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was commercials, like you were saying. I don't know. But anyways,
real quick question. Did you get Dark Place vibes from the opening? Because I know I just from the music, I think, and that sort of since the what am I looking for here? Just like the grain or whatever of the old videotape or whatever reminded me of.
Yeah. It's like a combination of like, you know, this is before I knew that the creators were the same ones that made Tales from the Dark Side, but it was like a mashup of Tales from Dark Side and Dark Place to me. All right, so the episode starts up with a close-up of the dad boarding up the windows. The whole family's in the living room, which is where we're going to stay for the whole episode, which is very typical for Monsters. I would say I don't think I've watched an episode that has more than 3 sets. Nice. Usually it's 2.
That's how you keep your budget down right there, fellas.
Yep, and a lot of times it almost feels like you're watching a play. Which is kind of neat.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, this all felt very sort of like, if not a play, then like your first short, like out of college or during film school, basically. This would be like a short someone would film.
All right, so the dad's boarding up the windows, the whole family's in the living room, and then the mom tells the youngest kid, Brad, something like, oh, you must have really loved your meatloaf. You ate it all up. And I know this is going to sound like terrible and not entertaining, but he says Barfola. Yeah. but I don't want to starve.
It's all the tone is like over the top, like sitcom style acting, but to the point where they're like, it's so over the top that they're making fun of it.
Yeah It's definitely a parody of a sitcom. Mm-hmm. Kind of it's a parody of a lot of things. And the kid's delivery is so like sarcastic, perfect, mean-spirited, and douchey. Mm-hmm. Like, man, he is so good.
He really is.
But the mom, and then the mom, like a typical sitcom mom, just kind of brushes it off. She's, oh, Brad, you know, just kind of brushes it off.
Yeah.
Even though he's like rude as hell to her the whole time. Then he's got like the boy Brad, he's got like this sign, and we can't see what's on the sign yet, but he, his sister Dottie's like on the couch reading, and he just goes, this is so funny the way he says, he goes, I hope it doesn't bother. He says, I hope this doesn't bother you. And then he starts like hammering really loudly into the sign right next to her. And I don't know, just the way he did it was so funny. Mm. Then the dad says, come on, they're going to be late, as he walks to the wall and grabs a shotgun off the wall. It's just got a hanging.
Right. And it's perfectly normal. No one questions it. I love it.
Yeah. Everything's like played pretty straight at this point. They do ham it up a little bit later. The son complains to the dad about, you know, not really wanting to go. And then the dad says, without a hint of irony, you know, come on, son, it's everybody's responsibility to kill zombies this day of the year. Then the mom, who I, you know, this is for the sake of the audience, but she should know the answer. She asks, you know, why do corpses rise from the grave once a year in their town? And the dad says, some people say it's a gypsy curse or an atomic testing gone wrong, and some say it was due to shoddy embalming techniques, but it's their responsibility to kill them. Yeah,
right. Nice.
Then the son says to the dad, why don't you just shoot everyone whose ideas you don't agree with?
Man, that is that not Little Yehel right there or not?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a lot of social commentary in this episode, too. They crammed a lot into it. So then the dad says, the zombies are our enemies and we kill our enemies. Again, you know, this is like social commentary on Americans.
Oh, man, they nailed it.
Yeah. Then the kid says the zombies may be dead, but they still have rights. And he turns around his sign and his sign says, save the zombies. And the mom says, well, I think it's great that you've taken an interest in your father's work.
See, the only thing here, is, and maybe I missed it, but doesn't little Brad here sort of flip-flop by the end of the episode? Because here he's...
Yeah, but they explain, but he explains why.
Okay.
Because they do call that out when he flip-flops.
All right.
I've seen this three times.
Oh, I see.
There is not a single plot
hole. This is the most passionate I've seen you about any of the stuff that we've covered ever in our 3 years as a podcast.
No. When we covered The Visitor from Deep Space Nine, I was more passionate.
Oh,
about
yeah.
That.
Well, that was. Let's not bring that up. I don't want to start crying.
Anyways, so the daughter, Dottie, she's visiting home from college. She says she's not going to go out with him. She's going to stay home and read. Brad, the son, makes some complaints about the family, and the dad tells the daughter not to let anyone in while they go out, that everything's, you know, boarded up. Mm-hmm. Then as they're leaving, the mom asks Dottie if there's enough food in the fridge because no child of hers should go hungry. Right. And then Brad, the son, says, well, try serving some decent food then. But
what a little Bart Simpson. A little Bart Simpson.
And like, it's not about the line. It's really about his delivery and, like, just the vigor and the venom in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. This kid's seen some things.
So good, yeah.
So family leaves, and now Dottie's home alone. It's thundering and raining outside, and she's startled by a knock at the door. So she's asked, you know, who is it? And the person
before,
on the other side
wait,
of the,
before we get to that, if you don't mind, I'd like to jump in right there. So she's sitting on the couch reading, and then we see over her shoulder in sort of like a slow zoom or push in to the window that someone is like looking through the boards at her. And I just really like that cinematography.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention
Yeah. I mean, they did a lot with a little, you know.
Yes,
I'll give
absolutely.
Them a lot of credit. So the person on the other side of the door says it's Paul from high school French class. And she at first kind of doesn't really remember, but then she's like, oh, okay. She opens the door and sees that it's a zombie holding flowers. and she screams and slams the door shut. Paul keeps knocking and calling her name. Dottie goes to the phone and calls like the zombie helpline. And
oh man, that was hilarious.
Instead of a person answering, it's like an automated thing where it's like, press 1 if you need general information about zombies, press 2 if a zombie is currently eating you.
I feel like we've encountered that joke in at least like 4 other things that we've covered. I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'm thinking, I feel like maybe Bruno the Kid did it, like a lot of the cartoon, but that was like a running gag from the late 80s all mm-hmm. the way to like the year 2000.
And it's usually, in my opinion, not funny.
Right.
Probably just because it's been done so many times,
sure.
But this time, I don't know if it was just that it caught me so off guard.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, yeah.
Yeah, and then she, I don't know which option she pushes, but she pushes an option, and then they're like, put her on hold or whatever. So she gets frustrated and Paul keeps knocking. Paul asks her to open the door. She finally opens the door, even though she's terrified. And what do you think here about his zombie makeup?
I mean, I think for the time and the budget, it definitely works. I liked it.
It's both kind of like, it's both like bad and good. Like, it looks cheap and not great at times, but the idea, some of the ideas behind it are really cool. Like, they have like these tendrils of his skin hanging down that's not quite connected to the neck, you know? So it makes it look like there's like holes in his neck, kind of.
I feel like it's something that would look maybe a lot more menacing, maybe in darker lighting, but
I was just gonna say the lighting is, it's like sitcom lighting.
yes, yeah,
So it's very
absolutely.
bright and even. So yeah.
In a way, it makes it all the more sort of jarring and over the top that we have this fully, quote unquote, or for lack of a better term, fleshed out, pun intended, zombie in
Yeah.
full on sitcom lighting. It's not something you see every day.
Yeah. So he like moved, like everything about that he does is like freaking her out, and she keeps doing like these little like screams. And I gotta say, like I haven't, outside of the Cosby Show, which I don't really remember anything
Yeah, me
about, even though I
either.
used to watch all the time, I haven't really seen her in anything, and she's pretty good, man, with her comedic timing and the choices she makes. I was re Everybody in this is really good, but I was really impressed and surprised by Tempest. But yeah, so he like moves to give her flowers. She lets out like this weird scream. He asks if he can sit down, and Paul keeps like smiling like really awkwardly. Like he has like this huge big smile the whole time. It's really weird and creepy. So they sit down. She's still very jumping, you know, like screeching when he talks and that kind of stuff. I forgot to mention earlier, the guy that plays Paul, this is his first acting credit.
Oh, wow. Oh, good for him.
Yeah. So Dottie asks why he's here. They're both sitting on the couch, and you know, as he's talking to her, he realizes that he's Paul from her class, that Paul that was killed in a car accident. Then she also, as they're talking, she remembers that he was really funny in class and kind of starts to warm up a little bit to him as they're talking and just kind of reminiscing about like their French class. She asks him to do the impression of their French teacher. He does it.
Does he even do a French accent? I mean, I guess she wouldn't be French.
Did you?
He just does sort of like a
Well,
high
did
pitch.
you? He's. He, I think he's trying to do a French accent.
I just heard like.
But did you notice that he like starts cracking?
No, I didn't.
This guy Paul, there's like three times where I didn't make a note of each one, but I did make a note of the next time he does it. But he starts like smiling and almost
You
loses
know,
it a
now
few
that you mention
times.
it, I think that it maybe just didn't register at the time, but now I see it in like my mind's eye that he was.
And there's another, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
No,
off.
I'm done.
There's another, it might have been here where Tempest also starts to crack a little bit because he's cracking. And I'm sure they just didn't film another take because they don't got the time or
Right,
money.
exactly.
But yeah, anyways, so he does the impression, and you know, she talks about how much she liked it, and he says that he didn't think he liked the things that he was saying in class. She says that she did and thought he was really funny. Paul says that he's there at her house because he wanted to meet her. And she asks, well, why didn't you say anything before, you know, like before when you were alive? He said he was too shy, but he's going to make up for it now, and says super cheerfully, today is the first day of the rest of my death.
That's a great line.
Again, his delivery is really, really good. Dottie kind of starts confiding in Paul that, you know, she wishes she was more like him, outgoing and this and funny, because she's like lonely in college and doesn't have any friends. Paul's like, how? You know, you're
So
so fun to be
beautiful,
around, and you're
yeah.
beautiful. And she's like, oh no, I'm not. And she's like, oh, you. And he's like, oh, you're very beautiful to me. Then they kind of like this music, like romantic music, starts playing, the soft piano or something. And they like very, it's really funny. It's hard to explain. They just kind of very slowly like keep leaning into each other, and eventually they
Yeah,
kiss.
that's, I would say, yeah, that's like your typical. I mean, I guess back in like 1950s sitcoms, there was no kissing on TV, but I would say it's more of like a movie, like 1950s movie, teen, you know, slowly moving in, the music swells, and
Yeah.
then do they actually kiss? Oh no, yeah, they're almost about
Yeah,
to, and then
yeah,
they
yeah,
finally
yeah.
do. And at this
Yeah.
point, I was getting like a total David Lynch vibes, because this is sort of his style of, you know, hyper reality of like making fun of like sitcoms, like, you know, music swelling. And but then you've got this zombie in there too. So it's like just two weird clashing genres that totally works. One thing you didn't mention is that before they almost kiss, at one point his ear falls off.
Oh, that's right. He's like nervous. So he's like fidgeting with his ear.
It's so obvious.
And you know what I really liked?
What?
Yeah, I really like, though, that he's fidgeting with his ears from the moment he walks into the house, but it doesn't fall off till, like, the couch scene, the which is later. So I
set up some payoffs, yep.
Yeah, so I really like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, that when the ear falls off, he, like, picks it up real quick so she doesn't, like, see it.
It's also great, I can't remember if you mentioned it or not, that he walks like he's been dead for a while. Like he's, you're literal.
Yeah.
Stiff,
yeah. Like he's got rigor mortis.
Yeah. Slow moving zombie, which I appreciated that big time.
Yep. So they cut to commercial after the kiss. And when we're back from commercial, Paul and Dottie are like both laying on the couch cuddling.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but you skipped over an awesome trick. If you, I don't know what you want to call it, but like when what's the zombie's name again?
Paul.
When Paul first shows up at the door, she screams. Then they cut to commercial. They cut back and she's still screaming. And I just...
Oh, yeah, she's still screaming.
I loved that. Like, if the... So, of course, if you watch this on YouTube, the commercials aren't there. But, man, is it... would it have been awesome, like, back in, you know, 1988?
Right. She was screaming for, like, 2 minutes straight.
The whole commercial break. Yeah, it's awesome. But anyway.
And then they kind of flip that at the end with a not scream, which we'll get to. So they're cuddling on the couch. They're just kind of reminiscing about high school. He kisses her hand, but, you know, he's a zombie and he just like can't resist like taking a bite. He starts to get more aggressive with the kissing and he can't resist and bites her hand. And Dottie like screams and gets away. Paul falls back. Dottie's like, they're now like kind of on opposite ends of the living room. And Dottie's crying. Paul's just like on his back and he says sorry, but he says it like
sorry.
He's like sorry. Yeah. So weird.
It is weird.
Anyways, so Dottie's real pissed and says, and Paul says that he didn't mean to and that he's just hungry and that he hasn't eaten since July.
Right.
This is the one time of the year he gets to eat and he didn't mean it. He tells Dottie that he loves her. But Dottie says that she was stupid to even try this and that it can't work out. She says that I'd always be part girlfriend, part dinner.
Yeah.
Which is another pretty funny line. Then she says, I know you zombies, you only have one thing on your mind.
There you go.
Yeah, then Paul says, how can I prove it, you know, to you that I won't eat you? And then he walks over, like you were saying, like real stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so slow, right? But then she like screams as he starts taking his stuff. She's like, ah, she could clearly get away.
Right. He's a straight
he walks
up.
So slow, but she doesn't.
He's a straight up Romero zombie, except for the fact that he can talk.
Yeah. So then he gets down on one knee and, you know, asks her to marry him. And then she replies, you know, you don't want my hand in marriage. You want a sandwich.
Right.
and this is the other time, one of the other times that the guy playing Paul almost starts cracking up when he starts begging her to stay with him. Mm-hmm. Like he is on the verge of losing it. which just makes it all the funnier.
Sure.
so anyways, Dottie says, you know, that she won't marry him. And Paul says, is it because I'm dead?
Yeah.
That's so sad.
See, the thing here is that, you know, this scene, the whole scene that we're seeing here has been played out in so many other movies. And, you know, I don't know if we should wait until the end, but this is an obvious, you know, sort of social satire for like mixed race relationships. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're not wrong in saying that. It's social commentary on a lot of things. Yeah, mixed race relationships, war, racism in general,
xenophobia. Sure.
Yeah. I don't know how they fit all this stuff into this. Mm-hmm. It's quite the achievement. It's only 22 minutes long.
Oh, it flies by. I thought when it was about to end, I was like, is there another episode? I'm like, you know, like they crammed like 2-15 minutes into, no, it was done.
Yeah. So anyways, Dottie says that she won't marry him. Paul asks if it's because he's dead. And Dottie says, no, it's just that We're in different places right now, and even though she likes him, they're too different to be together and asks him to leave. Excuse me. Paul asks her for one last favor so that so that he like remembers this and knows that it was real and they were really friends. He asks if he can sign her yearbook. Dottie thinks it's sweet and agrees. She goes upstairs to get the yearbook. And while she's upstairs, Paul is just waiting in the living room because we don't have another set, baby.
Right.
And as he's waiting, the rest of the family walks in. So the dad, as soon as he walks in, he goes, the dad's delivery cracks me up because he's so. I'm pretty sure the dad is doing this on purpose. He's like hamming it up and almost like trying to act bad.
Oh yeah, it's like yeah, it's camp for camp's sake, and it
Yeah,
works. It's
yeah.
awesome.
He opens the door. He goes, "What's this? The door is open?" So then the dad sees Paul, and then the dad looks at the couch and sees blood from her hand. So all the dad sees on the f is like her Dottie's shoes, and that there's some blood on the couch. So he thinks that Paul killed her or Paul ate her. And then the dad says, "You zombie bastard." With this really weird delivery, Paul starts licking his lips, seeing the family because he's, hungry. Then Dottie starts coming down the stairs. Dad says, "Oh, you're alive, princess. Stay back. I got him." Dottie's like, no, Dad." The dad goes to shoot Paul, but Dottie jumps in front of the gunshot, and instead of shooting Paul, he shoots her through the yearbook. Which is a cool little shot where, like, because as she's holding the yearbook, she like kind of slides down, and then it reveals that she's all
It was an
bloody
awesome
behind.
reveal for sure.
The dad and mom, like, they weren't like that torn up. It didn't seem
No, they were
as
very sort of kind of deadpan, emotionless, but I mean I guess that's per you know on purpose.
I d this just must happen in this town a lot, So anyways, then Dottie kind of falls, and Paul picks her up and puts her on the couch. Dottie's dead. Paul walks up to the dad and says, "You killed her." The dad says it was an accident and that he thought Paul ate her. And the dad does sound remorseful now, but
Yes.
you think he'd be crying or something. But he's not.
Right.
Paul says that he loves Dottie, and the mom and dad are like shocked. The son is shocked too. The dad says, "I've made a terrible mistake, and it's all due to the my fanatical hatred of your kind." Which is both funny and again great social
Yeah,
commentary.
absolutely.
And then Paul says, "We too have been guilty of irrational fear and hatred."
This is like it's almost drifting into like a what are they called? Saturday or after school specials. It almost turns into an after school special here, and it's hilarious.
This is well, isn't this like that Tills from that Garth Marenghi's Dark Place episode where like he has like some kind of speech like this too,
Oh yeah,
about
because he's like racist against like Scottish people or something.
that's what it is.
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
I think
Scotch
so.
mist,
Yeah.
I think, is what it is.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. All right. So anyways, Paul says, "We too have been guilty of irrational fear and hatred. Perhaps one day zombie and livers will be at peace." The son and I, the first time I watched this, I was like,
Me
livers?
too.
Obviously like a metaphor for the N-word.
Sure.
And like Paul says, the son's like, "Livers?" He's super offended, the son. And then Paul says, "We call you livers. it's what we call the living." So then Dottie rises from the couch. She's got zombie makeup
A
now
little bit,
on.
a
And
very small amount of zombie, but I guess she hasn't been dead
well,
for very long, so.
she's just recently turned. So anyways, she's a zombie now too. Paul and Dottie, like, they both like peg leg walk towards each other. They do this hug and they kiss, and then the kid yells. Such a weird thing to yell. He goes, "Oh, gross, they're in love,
Oh yeah, I love
Barfola."
that because like, he should be horrified that they're zombies, but no, he's horrified that they're in love. And also, you didn't mention that, or they can't actually hug because their arms are stiff. So their arms are like,
yeah. So they just like bump chests with their arms
and
out.
Kiss.
But then they hug, right?
I think like, a little bit, yeah.
I mean, they play fast and loose with the movement because Paul, you know, is able to get down on one knee and he's able to give her the flowers.
Sure,
so, you
sure.
Know,
I mean, he can,
whatever's funniest for the moment,
right,
is how much they can move.
He can do it just slowly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we're actually getting to the part where you mentioned earlier about the kid kind of doing an about face. Mm-hmm. So the son calls the zombie, Paul, a monster. Mm-hmm. This is when the mom is like, hey, what the heck? I thought you liked zombies. And he goes, just because I think that they should have rights doesn't mean I like them. Which, again, is more like, I think, like social commentary now, you know? I think now they're like saying, okay, this kid is still like racist. Mm-hmm. He's just like begrudgingly saying, okay, they should have rights.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, all those virtue signalers who are like, you know, we need to take care of the poor. And then they're like, oh, well, why don't you put them up in your mansion? And they're like, no, I'm not doing that. Like,
I just don't think we should let them.
Yeah,
be poor,
no,
but,
we should.
I'm not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, let's keep them somewhere else. It's not in my mansion.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, like I said, the son was calling the zombies in general a bunch of names. Mm-hmm. He calls them stupid and mm-hmm. ugly, slimy monsters. And then the dad says, monsters aren't just things that look ugly. They can also be people that act ugly.
Oh, see? That's so after school special. Like, they should play this episode like to kids or middle school and high school students all over the country.
They should make the Klan watch this and maybe
oh my goodness, this has shown me the error of my ways. Come over here, sister, let's make
accent.
Out.
Oh god, we have to whip up another monsters episode
to
fix that.
No to incest, kids.
Yeah. So after the dad says, you know, that like it can also be people that act ugly, the kid Brad, the son says, yeah, that's a great philosophy, Dad. A Barfola philosophy. Yeah. And it's just
Barfola.
At this point, he is like the son has just been getting progressively madder as the show has progressed, and he's just like yelling practically now.
I wanna start incorporating Barfola into my daily vocabulary.
I can't believe that it, you know, if somebody told me that like a 10-year-old is going to say Barfola even once in this episode without watching it, I would have been like, oh, that's going to be terrible. Let alone like four times, and every time it gets better. Like the impact, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
This kid should have won an Emmy for this.
Absolutely.
Episode. Dottie then says that she's very hungry and has a sudden craving for fresh meat. And Paul starts trying to get Dottie out of there because like he doesn't want her to eat the family. Mm-hmm. So Paul's like, we're going to eat out. Oh, the mom says that they can raid the fridge.
They don't have any meat.
But they don't have any fresh meat or whatever. And then the son, Brad, says, great. The son says, that's just great. Don't kill them. Give them a banquet. Yeah. And then Paul has another funny line here. He says, oh, don't worry about it. We'll eat out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the mom, I think this is when the mom says that there's no meat in the house. Mm-hmm. And then the son says, no problem. We'll just kill the neighbors and feed them to the zombies.
Man, he was just on fire at the end here. Like, this kid has all the best lines. Maybe not all the best, but just everything he says is gold. The way he says it, it's just hilarious.
His delivery. He has the best delivery mm-hmm. in a episode where everyone has awesome delivery.
Absolutely.
Then the dad says to the mom, hey, isn't there something you can whip up? Then the mom gives the son like this evil look and says, now that you mention it, I think there is some fresh meat in the house. Mm-hmm. And then the son like says, no, mom, there's not. That's why we have to get the neighbors. And you have to remember the zombies, what they want is human flesh. And as he's saying this, he slowly realizes that everyone, you know, the mom, dad, and the Dottie and Paul, the zombies, they're like all looking at him like kind of the same evil look, and the zombies are licking their lips. So he realizes that, oh shit, they want to have the zombies eat me. Then the son, Brad, looks straight at the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and opens his mouth to scream, and they show his mouth open, but just as he's about to, like we're about to hear him scream, they cut to the monster's logo.
Oh, brilliant.
And that's
I mean,
the episode.
That is just like perfect, sort of a perfect sitcom ending, like to this, and a perfect horror ending, like if you will. Like just
yeah. like a dark version of a
Yeah,
sitcom
it's
ending.
like,
Yeah, just.
yeah, like if this were the 80s, like if it was Punky Brewster or one of the other sort of 80s sitcoms we cut, it would just be like, uh-oh, like, and then cut, like in credits basically. And yeah, they totally nailed it. Yeah, so should we render our verdict on Monsters, My Zombie Lover?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, well, since this was your pick, do you want to ask me first?
Yes, Steve. Do you think that My Zombie Lover, from the show Monsters, should be obliterated for all of time and eternity? Is that what you say? Or should it be remembered for
close
all of human
enough.
history?
Close enough. No, I think it should definitely be remembered. In fact, I think it's awesome that you somehow came across this because I completely forgot about this show. I love horror anthology. I think we're both huge fans of Tales from the Crypt. I do. Have you watched the new Creepshow that's been coming? I guess it's the only Creepshow
No.
compared to the movies. Yeah, like I want that to be like Tales from the Crypt good, but it just isn't. It just doesn't do enough. It's okay, but this was good. It's not Tales from the Crypt. It's a little different, a little campier, a little funnier, a little more social commentary, if you will.
It's definitely its own thing, and not every episode has like, in fact, I can't remember too many that have like social commentary. So like, yeah, it's definitely kind of its own thing.
Yeah, this one feels like it was written, directed. This feels like something George Romero would have done, maybe with a little less like sort of comedy or whatever. But I guess at this point, he and Rubenstein had long since split up. But anyway, long review short, I loved it. I want to watch more episodes of Monsters, and so for me, that's definitely a remember. How about yourself?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely a remember. I agree with everything you said. It was really funny. I mean, the whole series is up on that YouTube channel that Steve has linked to. Every once in a while, you'll get an episode that maybe isn't that great, but it's a lot like Saved by the Bell, where even when it's bad, it's still kind of good, if that makes any kind of sense. But yeah, it's really fun to watch. You never know who's gonna pop up. Most of the scripts are like fun and it's quick. It's like 20 something minutes. And speaking of Tales from the Crypt, this channel has like the full original Tales from the Crypt series, as well as a few other horror anthologies, some I had never even heard of. It has some stuff up through the mid 2000s, maybe up to the 2010s, something like that. So yeah, definitely check the channel out if you like horror stuff. Lots of good stuff there.
All right, well, for all those reasons and more, Monsters shall be remembered. In accordance to Obscurity Now, the most important streaming YouTube podcast in all of the internet, you shall be remembered. Yes. Good show. Good show. All right. Fun stuff. Fun stuff indeed. Well, we got through that one pretty quick. Anything else you want to talk about before we sign off today?
No, I think I'm good.
I mean, did you want to mention the progress of your video or whatever?
I'm still working on it,
I'm
so
sure.
but definitely getting close to finishing it up. Finally passed all the difficult stuff to edit. So hopefully by next episode I'll be talking about when you can watch it.
Fantastic. I'm about in the middle of Escape to Earth issue 3 Kickstarter. At the same time, pages are coming in, so I guess even if the Kickstarter isn't successful, the book is going to be completed one way or the other. It would be nice to recoup a little bit of what I've already paid the artist and the colorist. But if not, it's just money. You can't take it with you, right? In the meantime, I guess if you listen to this episode super early on Sunday when it drops, Look for me at WonderCon. I'll be wandering around with copies of Escape to Earth. But if you don't want to buy one, just say hello anyway, and we can talk about monsters or Surf Nazis Must Die or Bruno the Kid and any piece of trash that we covered.
Sure, sure.
All right, well, we will be back next Sunday with something. We're going to figure it out. And in the meantime, make sure you are subscribed if you're not, and share. And tell all your friends, help us fight the algorithm, and we'll see you next time as we continue to unearth more obscure media only on Obscurity Now. See you next week. I'm having a weird, weird day. My name's Adam. Where I'm from, I'm known as the Zero Thief. Depending on who you ask, some might say I'm the best thief. But believe it or not, even the best screws up every once in a while. And that's what I did, and I had to make a fast getaway. I ended up crash landing on this bizarre planet. Turns out, I didn't get away fast enough. These winged freaks followed me here.
It's just us here, Zero Thief, on this empty backwoods planet. So start talking, either to me or my blade.
Okay, I do have something to tell you. It's about the planet. It's not that empty. Come on, man. I thought you were gonna duck. Cut me loose. Cut me loose. Behind you. Whoa. Thought I was done for. It was gonna be a light snack for a snarling creature. But then, she showed up, riding on the back of one of those monsters like it was nothing. And with a wave of her hand, the other razor-toothed beast just stomped away. I'd never seen anyone like her before in my life. I thought I'd say something clever. Thanks, have you seen my ship? She gave me a look that said more than words ever could, because I think she was trying to read my mind or something. And from there, things just got even weirder. Issue 3, The Dinosaur Stampede. Crowdfunding now, only on Kickstarter. Get it now before it's extinct. You've been enjoying Obscurity Now, a podcast that's recorded live to tape and streamed to Twitch and YouTube. Subscribe so you never miss an episode or hilarious quip. Take us with you by following the download links provided in the show notes to wherever you get podcasts. And take notice of our various social media links if that's what you're into. I'm not here to judge. And make sure you join us live next week at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific as we continue to discuss more obscure media only on Obscurity Now.